Hariho Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, bottom of 30 or middle of 30. Okay. Both the Lord and the living entity are cognizant, and both have the sense of identification, of being conscious as a living force. But the living being, under the condition of material nature, called Mahat Tattva, misidentifies himself as being different from the Lord. The whole scheme of Vedic wisdom is targeted to the aim of eradicating such a misconception and thus liberating the living being from the illusion of material identification. When such an illusion is eradicated by knowledge and renunciation, the living beings are responsible actors and enjoyers also. The sense of enjoyment in the Lord is real, but such a sense in the living being is a sort of wishful desire only. And so you're getting the element of like the whole and the part. So it's just like the person, he can say he's the enjoyer, right? Something's going on, he's enjoying. But the hand can't say, I'm the enjoyer. Because then the difficulty comes up is the hand may enjoy, but the hand can only enjoy in connection with the body. Right? So if the hand is trying to separately enjoy without the connection with the body, how that'll work? Right? The hand can't enjoy, let's say, the food on its own. It has to go in the mouth. Then the benefit goes to the hand. Right? So the jiva then in illusion thinks, I'm separate from the Lord. The Lord being everything, we're just part of Him. Or one of His energies. You know, just like we're a hand, or we're a foot, or we're something. We're not the whole. So, being cognizant and seeing oneself as an individual being, that's fine. The problem is then the Lord can function on His own because He is everything. There isn't technically anything separate from Him. Right? But the living entity, being the energy of the Lord, is separate, right? So there's no question of functioning outside of that. That's the illusion, right? So we see something, we think, I will enjoy this on my own. Just like the hand says, oh, I'll enjoy this myself. Mm-hmm. But it can't. You can try. You can sit there and smoosh food all day. The hand won't get any benefit. Right? So that's what happens. The living entity tries to enjoy in the material world. And there seems that I will enjoy, but at the moment, it's not really happening. Right? Just because there's no satisfaction. If there was satisfaction, then you could say maybe something's happening. But there's no satisfaction. So we just try something else. So that's the difficulty. Right? So it's there. You smush on one thing a while, you're not getting any benefit. Maybe it's because of this. If I smush something else, then I'll get the benefit. So that's what we do. You know, I go skiing, I break both legs. Okay, we won't do that. Let's do something else. You know, then we, you know, let's try, you know,
snowboarding,
yeah. Or, you know, parachuting or something like that. You know, it gets worse, right? So at some point, then it's just, now what are we going to do? So the thing is, this is the whole point, as it mentions, the living beings are responsible when such an illusion is eradicated by knowledge and renunciation. The living beings are responsible actors and enjoyers also. In other words, it's not that the hand doesn't enjoy, it can't enjoy separately. So this idea we want to be enjoyers, that's not the problem. It's that we want to be enjoyers separate from the Lord. That's where the problem comes out. Yes.
So what comes first? First you have to have knowledge and renunciation, or you get that from? Because it sounds there like it's saying that you first have to have it, therefore...
Have which?
Knowledge and renunciation, and that illuminates...
No, but that's because we said by performance of bhakti, then knowledge and renunciation automatically come. Then one's able to see one's position better. So then one's identification within the devotional process improves. So one's devotional service improves. That improves the quality of knowledge and renunciation. So in other words, the bhakti process itself being self-sufficient, then the whole thing will work. One has to stick to this. But the point is you should be aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like when you're cooking, the food cooks itself. You don't actually cook anything. You say, well, what do you do? I'm cooking. We're not cooking. The fire is doing the cooking, right? The pot, the spoon, that's what's the cooking. But we're aware of what's going on. We're taking part in the process. So we're aware when it's not cooked or overcooked or like that. Does that make sense? So then we can take part in that. That's why it says here, be responsible actors and enjoyers also. So the actor means we take part in a process that's already going on. Does that make sense? So it goes back here. What was going there? That, but the living being under the condition of material nature called Mahatattva misidentifies himself as being different from the Lord. So there he misidentifies himself as different because of the false ego. False ego is I'm not connected to the Lord. Real ego is I'm connected with the Lord. Same times you remember when we were discussing about what was it? Vairaja, right? Is that the subtle form of the creator, right, of Brahma, is that that's the enjoying mood, the mood of enjoyment of what you can get from the creation. Because if that's there, then the gross creation has some meaning. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say, you take something very nice, you know, we get some, I don't know, some very exclusive edible, and plunk it down in front of an infant. Does it matter?
No.
No. You know, in fact, you know, instead of taking, let's say, the bottle of olive oil and pouring it on something like that, they'll just kind of like lick the bottle, you know, or gnaw on the cap or something, you know, or, you know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that unless there's the sense of enjoyment, then the external creation doesn't have any meaning. Right? So in other words, the concept of creation is based on the principle of enjoyment. The living entity wants to enjoy, so there must be the concept that this is something I can enjoy. Then having those things has some meaning. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that so we see is that when you move in these more, higher social circles, one, if you're in knowledge of what they're doing in there, then, you know, everything's very fine. They respect that. If you're almost there, then they'll just throw something out. Oh, this is, you know, 1937, you know, from this particular valley. And then people, ooh. But then you at least have to be able to go from there. If you go, what's that? You know? You know, yeah, 1937, wasn't that when Hitler did this? Then it's kind of like, you don't get invited to the next party. You understand? So the whole point is that you have to appreciate that this is something really enjoyable. Right? Then it has a meaning. So if you don't catch it, they'll throw it out. So in other words, the enjoyment aspect has to be first. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. So therefore, the Vairaja aspect of Brahma is there before the Chaturmukha Brahma is there. Right? Like that. Okay. So they've gotten this false sense. So that's already there that I am the controller and enjoyer. Then we get the specifics of what we're going to try to control and enjoy. Right? Now here, then, being a responsible actor means we can take part in a process that's already going on. The Lord's energies are already interacting with each other. We can take part as an instrument. Just like in the cooking process, we'll say, I'm cooking, but actually we're only an instrument in the cooking. Right? We can push the spoon around. But it's not that we just push it any time we like. We have to push it when the cooking process says that's the time to push it. Right? Does that make sense? You want to fry something, we just keep pushing like this. Nothing gets fried. Right? So you have to leave it enough that it gets fried but not burnt. So we're only an instrument. Right? We'll say, okay, we can understand the spoon's an instrument, or the pot's an instrument, you know, or the vegetable's an instrument. But we generally never think we're an instrument. You know? So that's the whole thing, is then we're responsible actors and enjoyers, because then you enjoy, because the Lord's enjoying, we're enjoying. Right? If you're dealing with a friend and doing something to please them, you're naturally pleased.
Yes.
And in fact, you're probably more pleased than they're pleased.
Yes.
Like that. Is that, yes.
So being an instrument, is it eternal position of the jiva?
Yes. That's just the nature. Just like the hand is eternally an instrument for the whole body as a whole. Like that. So that's the thing. When we understand our position, then it works nicely. You know, it's just like when you know what you're supposed to do, then everything works. You know, that's the whole thing. So it's not that we're taking it only if I'm in a particular position, then I'll be happy. No, it's that when you know what is your position, then you'll be happy. You know, because it works for anything. You know, yeah.
So from what you've just said, the fear would come from this identity which the jiva gains and a joint controller. So he feels that if he takes the other identity, that I'm part of the whole, then he'll lose something.
He'll lose something. He won't be happy. Or even not thinking that far, just the materialists, they get fearful because they're worried they're going to lose the situation in which they think I'm going to enjoy from. Just like one thinks, through my body I'll enjoy. So then if somehow or another you're walking and you turn into the wrong alley, then fear comes, because there's the thought of loss of the body or things connected to the body. Right? You know, you just don't want to lose those, you know, Jordan Nike shoes, right? You know, so, you know, those kind of things are, you know, that comes into mind. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but that's on the immediate level, because there's always two levels of this. Right? There's the immediate of what it is you're attached to, but then there's the overall concept of attachment, what you mentioned. So even if we give up the, you know, for the general devotee, okay, the main attachment is not so prominent. You know, because they, you know, they've used their intelligence, they've understood that, but still that primary one, there's sometimes a thing, if I surrender, then will I be taken care of? Because there's that idea is that security, if it's guaranteed by someone else, fine, if I trust. But if I don't, I'll get it myself. Mm-hmm. That's what people do nowadays. They don't trust. Everyone wants to get everything themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's why we see the Bhagavatam opens with stories that show how Krishna takes care. Right? Just so we see is, okay, these examples are more extreme than any situation I've been in. And Krishna's taking care. So therefore, in my situation, which is much less, then Krishna can take care. Right. Does that make sense? So that's the primary. Because if the primary one's there, it's easy to give up the secondary. Right? But if we're not aware of the primary, we start with the secondary. You know, it's just like the main thing is the mind and everything. When the mind surrendered to the Lord, means automatically the body surrendered to the Lord. Right? But because we're not necessarily so much in touch with the mind on that level, we start with the body. The body is there in the kitchen washing pots for Krishna. Right? And then with time we start to make a connection between these things. Because in the material world, generally very few understand these connections. So someone who does, then naturally they can start at a quicker pace. But if not, it'll start there, because the process is so perfect that, because it is the nature of the soul to be involved, therefore anything connected with the soul means that the mind, the body, the intelligence, those can automatically be engaged. You understand? So either, so it's just like you see someone like Prakashananda Saraswati or Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So they're already on that transcendental platform of understanding that they're the soul, not the body. So once they're convinced about the position of the Lord in their relationship, then we see they're advanced immediately. Right? But others then, like Jagamata, they start on the bodily platform and then move up from there. You know. You understand? So, but the point is because we're dealing with eternal time, it doesn't matter. You know, it's not that it's so much of a problem that, you know, this person took a few weeks or months or years to get to that particular position. Because in comparison with eternity, it doesn't matter. So wherever you are, start there. And that's it. Yes.
The position is a bodily thing.
The position means?
Well, to know your position, it's depending on what body you have.
But where does the body come from?
From Krishna.
No, that's there. But I'm saying, what creates the particular body you have?
Consciousness.
But what's between your consciousness and the body?
False ego.
False ego. What's between the false ego and the body? The mind. You understand? Gita is saying that whatever condition the mind is in, then that's the kind of nose, the eyes, the ears you attract. You know, you like to pick things up with your nose, then you become an elephant.
Yes.
Right? You're happy to pick it up with your hands, then you're some variety of, you know, human or primate. You know what I'm saying?
So if by Christmas,
you understand? So it's yes. Not that it's the body and the mind go together.
Yeah.
That's why you can't say, well, we're not the body, so I can do whatever I like. But then what about the mind? You're not. No one's saying I'm not my mind.
Yes.
Right? That's not being dropped. So the body and mind is the condition you work with, and that mind, because that's what controls your intelligence. So the only thing left that's the free one is the ego. Though it's part of the mind. Mm-hmm. But by changing the identity of the ego, then we can change what the body, intelligence, and the body do, the mind, in connection with the Lord. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't change the nature that they're in.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So.
Does that make sense? So a child will do things that a child does, an adult will do things that an adult will do.
So the nature is quite hard to change.
You don't have to. It's not about changing the nature. It's about changing the consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's just like you go into the kitchen, right? You pull open the drawer. There's all kinds of stuff inside, right? Mm-hmm. Now, an adult has an idea of what each and everything is for, right? But, you know, a three-year-old gets a hold of that drawer and, you know, everything does everything. You know what I'm saying? So they will do whatever they like. So now maturity means understanding what it's actually for.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of changing the nature. It's not that, you know, the child is using a screwdriver as a hammer, so therefore you have to change the nature of the screwdriver. No, you have to understand it's a screwdriver, not a hammer.
What if you use that tool for the wrong
That's what culture is for. Culture is there to keep us from using the tools in the wrong way.
So it's awareness. Like if you know the cultures and you know maybe you did something wrong, then it's the awareness that just keep reminding yourself not to do that again.
It's not. It's a matter of okay, you shouldn't do it again. But it's more important what should you be doing? Because not doing something, okay, that's great, but you have to do something. So what should you be doing?
Speaking sweetly or speaking nicely.
Yes.
Speaking uplifting conversation.
Yes. So these are the things that one does. Then it works. So so that means then you're not nasty.
Yes.
It's not a matter of not being nasty. It's a matter of being nice.
Yes. Yes.
You understand? So that's the thing is that berating yourself about, oh, I did this, I do that, I'm so terrible. That's not so useful because what about doing something?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
It just keeps coming out of me.
That's because
that it came out, but then it's already happened.
So that's why it's practice. Yeah. So then it's okay. Then think through again and why not? What should you be doing? What's the benefits of doing it properly?
Yeah.
Then again you'll try. So that's what practice is for. Practice means you tend to do everything wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And so when you do it right, then they give you either hold up a card that says 10 or give you a, you know, one of those statues made out of gold or, you know, like that. They open the little envelope and say your name in connection with best actor or
maybe
something.
Maybe we can get a step closer to Christmas.
Yes. But my point is that when you get it right, it works. But you have to keep practicing. If you don't keep practicing, the point is if we get disillusioned and stop the practice, we'll never get there. So mode of ignorance is not beneficial. Mode of ignorance doesn't get anything. Of course, it has a really involving, intense taste. But other than taste, it doesn't have any benefit. Because the only one that benefits from the taste is yourself. Even then, it's quite destructive. You know what I'm saying? Is that something?
Yes, thank
yes.
you.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Maharaj, one of the things that picks up people is when you tell them that how little free will you have, you're an instrument, most of the materialists go, and... You know.
So don't tell them that.
So you preach with stories or indirectly?
No, it's not a matter of indirectly, because everything about the philosophy is truth. You just deal with those parts that are relevant. The point is that you can do something in connection with the Lord or not. You don't have to get into that, well, you only have the desire or things like that. The point is that they think I am in control of my body, my mind, and that. So now you could, being in control, you can either use it in connection with the Lord or not. Use it not in connection with the Lord. We suffer. Otherwise, why are they listening to you talk philosophy? Right? Does that make sense? Because they're suffering. Means if you go back in time, the first ones to notice that they were suffering were the Greeks, right? So then they come up with some ideas. So Socrates had the understanding that there's a real, actual reality and then there's the illusion. So we're looking at the illusion. That's why we're not happy. But when we actually hear about the reality, we'll be happy, right? But you have to be careful because sophists don't like that. And so then, you know.
Drink this.
Yes, drink this. Yeah, it wasn't an Alice in Wonderland drink this kind of. Yes. You didn't get bigger or smaller or something. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is you focus on whatever it is that they are looking for. So they'll either be more focused on the intelligence, on the senses, on their mind, the feelings, or just the physical, you know, or their identity. They're going to be moving in those areas or any combination. So you deal with those areas, how to connect it to the Lord. That's the first thing. These other things are finer points. Because even you say, tell the materialists these things, you tell the devotees these things, they freak out. Right? Devotees don't necessarily like hearing these things. That's why we discussed yesterday is that because there's going to tell such nice and sweet and attractive things in the Bhagavatam so that you don't just take it for granted, then the Bhagavatam also explains stark reality so that you can balance the two. Like that. Does that make sense? It's just like the person that you're most close to is the person that can emotionally close to is the person who can emotionally hurt you the most.
Yes.
Person you have no emotional connection with can't emotionally hurt you. Yeah, you understand? So the whole point is because you're dealing on this level, then because you're taking it so far one way, you have to balance it with the other. Right? So if you're aware of this, you won't get hurt by it. But if you're not aware of it, then you will get hurt. Right? In other words, the material energy is still the material energy. Even you become a devotee, fire still burns. It's just the way it works. Right? So that's the thing, is that spiritual world is so conscious, they never get burnt by the fire. Or the fire is conscious, it might move, so you don't get burnt. Right? But in the material world, then you're not conscious, you get the reaction. That's why you have to take care of children. They're not conscious. So the material nature doesn't distinguish, oh, here's an adult or here's a baby. So the adults have to distinguish for the child. Does that make sense? Okay, so responsible actors means we take part. The Lord is taking part in interacting with the devotees, with the living entities. So we take a responsible part and react nicely. Just like if someone wants to deal with you nicely, you know, it's just like, oh, hi, how are you? And it's, you know, and then it's like, what's it to you? You know, I say, it's like, you know, how do you have a relationship? It doesn't work. You know? The sense of enjoyment of the Lord is real, but such a sense in the living being is a sort of wishful desire only, right? Because everything is Him, so He is the enjoyer. We are part of Him, so we're not the enjoyer, right? But we are cooperative enjoyers. When the Lord enjoys, because we're part of Him, we'll naturally enjoy. So if we see it like that, then we're happy, right? And it's not that it's less. Generally, you'll find if someone's mature, then let's say you are doing something for the other person, you get more out of it than they do. But generally, it's a symptom of immaturity when, let's say, you have a party for someone, it's their birthday, and there's so much more ecstasy than everybody else. People think this is weird, right? They'll generally be more sober, and everybody else will be more happy, right? That's the natural. So the point is being a responsible enjoyer means you play your part in the process, then you actually enjoy more than the Lord does.
Yes. Because the Lord is everything, even though He's enjoying rasa, He still remains Atmaram?
Yes, but the point is He, because there's a greater taste in rasa, in the rasa of interaction than just in the rasa of oneness. Right? In other words, visesha, specialness, that's where taste is. Right? Everything's just one, there's no taste. The taste is in the difference, right? Isn't it? That's the French saying. What is it? Vive la difference or something.
Vive la différence.
Yes. Yeah, okay. See? So they figured out. Now, on the planet, if you think of one culture, who's the enjoyers, right? The French. They figured it out, right? Make a difference.
You know?
Huh?
De France.
Maybe that's why it's called France. France is the place where they make the de France. Okay, yeah, see, so right there. You got some very essential meanings here. Right? Yeah. So that's the... So it's not that He's not one, but the point is He takes the other position. That's then what's respectable. Right? Like that. Yeah. So if the man takes that, even in the material cultural thing, the man, he's independent, but he acts as if he's dependent. Within the framework of dependency, then he gets the respect of the woman. If he's independent and doesn't interact, then what's the point? Or if he's dependent and not independent, he gets no respect. But he's independent, but he voluntarily gives that up to be work in the relationship, then you have something. Right, you understand? So that's the natural point. And then, because of that position, he's acting in that position. Right? Therefore, even the living entity can take a position superior to the Lord. Right? Like the cowherd boyfriends of Krishna are telling him, Krishna is weak, we can defeat him in a wrestling match. Right? But that's because of the consistency, you know that surrender by the Lord is so great, and He acts within that. That's why then we are also acting in that position, because you actually know His position. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So then it becomes very nice. One may say, that's superficial. But the point is, you're two different entities. You have to find something common. Right? Means the difference... Then means, in other words, if everything's one, there's no taste. If everything's two, there's no taste. There has to be simultaneous one and two. So you're enough different to be able to work together, but there has to be enough same that there's something common to work on. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the balance. So each realm within the spiritual world has a different balance of that. You know, so therefore the different flavors. And within the material world, there's the difference. Right, so the higher societies, it's more subtle. right? It's greater, but you don't talk about it. Let's say, like, in the military, they have a military party amongst the officers. Now, there's two kinds. One, where it's formal, everybody wears their uniforms. But then there's the informal ones, where they wear their what do you call it, mufti or whatever it is. You know, so they but in there, it's very subtle. So everyone hangs out together and chats together. But the point is everybody's got to know who the general is.
Yes, yes.
Like that. It's very subtle. You don't cross the line. But it's as close as possible as you can get without, you know, otherwise it's no fun for the general. Right? Does that make sense? So that whole thing is that the higher it is, the more subtle the difference. But at the same time, there is a difference. That is something. Yeah. Okay. The difference in consciousness is the distinction of the two entities, namely the Lord and the living being. Otherwise, there's no difference between the Lord and the living being, right? Because the living being is part of the Lord. Like the hand is not different from the body. But within the body, you can tell the difference between one hand and another, a hand in your head or a hand in your foot, right? You're supposed to, right? At least, if nothing else, your head and your elbow, right? At least you should be able to tell that is the difference. Yes?
Wouldn't we say that the difference in consciousness should be also on the level of consciousness? Not only about the cognizance?
Well, cognizance is consciousness.
It says that this is the difference.
Difference in consciousness is the distinction between the two entities. Right? It means you can tell there's a difference between you and the Lord. Right? But at the same time, there's a common point to interact. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say, there's so many people, right, in the community, but you have different relationships with them. Right? So now you're conscious that you want to have this kind of relationship. So you're conscious of the difference, but you're conscious of what's the common point that makes that the relationship. Does that make sense? So it means the consciousness is different, that you know you're different. But the point is it's not you're worried about, well, he's unlimited and I'm mine, or like that. That's for breaking the material attachment. Because why that? We're taking he's unlimited and I'm the smallest. It's because we think we're the greatest, we're God. So, you know, you understand. So that's what those are for. But in rasa, that's not important, right? Is it important between the parent and the child that I'm big, you're small, you know, I'm right, you're wrong, like that kind of thing? Is that important? No. So that's not there, because there's a difference. But at the same time, there's a common point of interaction. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then it works. So it's enough to be able to function. Right? It's not too much. Otherwise, like Arjuna in the universal form, that's too much. Then he can't function. Right? Because when he understands how much God is God, then he can't function. You know, or we have the example of Moses. It's just, you know, the lower back of the Lord is too terrible to behold, you know, like that. You know, so it's like, you know, you got a problem here. So how do you have rasa? Right? Like that. Does that make sense? You know, therefore, burning bush, easier to relate to. Different. I'm not that burning bush. Right? You know, last I checked, I'm not on fire. Okay? Like that. At the party last night, yes, but now, no. Okay, so the party, you know, the bush is on fire. Yeah, okay. The living entity is therefore eternally one and different simultaneously. The whole instruction of the Bhagavad Gita stands on this principle, right, trying to establish this point. Then once that point is there, then this element of bhakti that the Bhagavatam is bringing out then can be appreciated. But you have to understand this principle first. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord and the living entities are both described as sanatana, or eternal, and the Lord's abode, as far beyond the material sky, is also described as sanatana. living, that's the funny thing, right? Because you hear Sanskrit words and people always say it with the English word. So sanata, but it's actually sanatana. That's weird. What does that mean? Okay. The living being is invited to live in the sanatana existence. Guy's weird. And the process which can help a living being to approach the Lord's abode, where the liberated activity of the soul is exhibited, is called Sanatana Dharma. One cannot, however, reach the eternal abode of the Lord without being freed from the misconception of material identification. And the Bhagavad Gita gives us the clue how to achieve this stage of perfection. Because if you think you're part of this world, how you'll be part of that world? Right? Yes. You won't want to go there. You won't want to take part when you are there. You know? Like that. So that's why you have to change the consciousness. Because if you change it to the spiritual, then you're already in the spiritual. And then you'll be comfortable in the spiritual realm.
Right. Yes. Well, wouldn't be that what devotees are trying to do, to get the best of the two worlds?
You can try. I mean, I remember one devotee I heard him relating to someone else. I wasn't really part of the conversation, but they were on the Riviera, French Riviera, okay, and they were there, and they were, you know, in one of those, what do you call it, those kind of like lounge chair kind of things, and they were there sipping a martini or whatever it is like that, and, you know, with their shades on and saying, you know, and they would turn to the other devotee that was there. Now we have the best of both worlds. So it Trump's trying to do it, yes, they do try. But then the whole point is that there's not two worlds, there's only one world. There's the reality and then there's the illusion. So the two are, I can see the real part, but at the same time I can appreciate the illusion. Like that. So the point is you give up the illusion, then you actually see the spiritual world. Because when you're looking at the material world and thinking this is the place I can enjoy, you're not actually looking at the spiritual world as the place I can enjoy. You're looking at it as a situation. There's the spiritual, there's the consciousness and that, but I can enjoy the material world. But when you give up the idea I can enjoy the material world, because the living entity by nature, it has to enjoy, because of Ananda, they have to be happy, then they will look for that in the spiritual. Because you won't really maintain both at once. You can't. I mean, so you're either happy here or happy there. How many games can you play at once? Yeah. I mean, it's called physical games. I mean, other mental games, okay. Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. So should we be thinking we'll be enjoying the spiritual world?
Spirit means here it says responsible enjoyer. No, in this, if we're convinced that I will enjoy by making Krishna happy, then we're only thinking about that. That enjoyment comes separately. It's just like if you arrange something for someone else and you're simply thinking about their happiness, it goes very smoothly and you see you're very happy. But if you're trying to get something from that, you're always trying to figure out if they appreciate what you did. Yes. You know, and then throw out various things, you know, you gave them the opportunity to appreciate, you know, yeah, it was so much trouble arranging this, you know, particular thing, you know, and they go, oh, nice, you know, and then you go, they didn't appreciate, you know, and all this and that, because then it's all about yourself, and you'll never appreciate, you'll never be happy at all, you'll never get anything, you know, that's why this modern thing of, you know, we gave them the opportunity, but they, you know, it's bogus, because then the whole point is it's about yourself. In other words, we're saying, I gave them the opportunity to make me the center of attention. Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, I'm presenting it as if I'm making them the center of attention.
So our thought of enjoyment in the spiritual world is by making Krishna happy.
Yes.
Making him enjoy and we feel happy because he's happy.
Yes. It's just like in the material world, on the higher levels, the more it's about someone else, the more you're happy. So it's the same thing. But generally you find that it takes a more refined culture to appreciate that. Right? The lower the culture, the more it's about themselves. The higher the culture, the more it's about others. Like that. Does that make sense? But that doesn't necessarily mean in sophistication. right? Because in sophistication, it may be, you have also the element where there's the sophistication, but it's about yourself, but you make it look like it's about the others, and everybody's doing that. So because everybody will do that, then it works. If somebody doesn't, it'll fall apart. You know what I'm saying? And then you may have those who are unsophisticated, but they're very personalist about the other person. You know what I'm saying? So you'll also get, then, you get those who are, it's a lower cultural kind of thing, and it's about themselves. That's the worst. Right? Then next best, the sophisticated person, where it seems it's about everybody else, but it's not. At least there's a show of it. Better than that is then the less sophisticated person who it's about, you know, the other person. And then highest is where the sophistication and about the other person is there. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
The sophisticated culture where it's all about yourself, won't that fall apart also?
It does fall apart. So I said, it will fall apart. But it may take longer, because at some point, because it's about yourself, someone's going to make a mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that. But it's a little more sustainable because of the apparent culture. Like that. When there's no culture, it's just automatically from the word go, bang.
Yeah, yes.
But here it has something. But someone, because it's for themselves, they can do as long as the opportunity's not too big. Okay, there's a little thing, you could get some advantage in the business over the part, you don't take it. But there's something where you can get, you know, hundreds of millions, you know, like that, or billions, then, you know, hey, who's the partner? You know, it's like, who cares? You know? So that's the whole point, is that at some point it'll break down because of that greed. You know? So the spiritual is the only thing that is sustainable. The process of being liberated from the misconception of material identification is called, in different stages, fruit of activity, empiric philosophy, and devotional service, up to transcendental realization. Such transcendental, so here he says, fruit of activity, okay, that's the gross materialist, then the empiric, then they're working on the principle of the subtle elements, right? They're working more with the mind and then going up to the soul, rather than the mind and down to the senses. So it's higher. Then devotional service, and it says devotional up to transcendental realization.
Yes.
So, in other words, the beginning process of sadhana bhakti up to transcendental realization. And then transcendental, then fully understanding our position as not being part of the material world, and then fully understanding we're servant of Krishna and taking it up in love of God.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So,
yes.
Is karma, jnana, and bhakti?
Yes, karma, jnana, and bhakti. Like that. Such transcendental realization is made possible by dovetailing all the above items in relation with the Lord. And because in the material world, you're going to be involved in karma or jnana, or fruit of activity and inferior philosophy. That's all we've done since time immemorial. So those are connected. Because then, fruit of activity, you're engaging the senses for yourself. Then you engage the senses for Krishna, then it's called devotional service. Right? Empiric philosophy, then it's about your senses and the mind, like that. But then when you connect it with Shabda or authority, and it's about Krishna, then it becomes the knowledge of devotional service. Right? So the two of them become automatically parts of devotional service. So karma yoga, jnana yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right?
What was Was that the word you said?
Thumpter
and
authority? Thumpter.
Thumpter.
Thumpter. I mean, there's thumpter. Thumper. But you said,
sorry.
I think, a rabbit.
No, you said something before. Authority.
Shabda.
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 Oh, Shabda.
Shabda means hearing from authority.
Oh, okay.
So Shabda means like for us, hearing from guru, from the scriptures, from the sadhus, like that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Like that. I mean, you know, Thumper's a nice guy. I'm not sure that he has that much to say. He's not known as being the wise one like that. You know.
Who is he? Isn't he a rabbit?
Yeah, he's a rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
He's not the wise one in the bunch. Right? Not exactly. I think the owl is the wise one. Right?
Usually is.
Yeah, usually is.
Man being here, no one wants to know.
Okay. Such transcendental realization is made possible by dovetailing all the above items in relation with the Lord. Prescribed duties of the human being, as directed in the Vedas, can gradually purify the sinful mind. Right, so here's how we'll engage the fruit of activity in fear, is by following the Vedas, but that's not enough unless it's connected to the Lord. Right? Otherwise, then, following them, you know, we're very nice, smart to Brahmins, like this, but it's not. Okay. So, okay, prescribed duties of the human being as directed in the Vedas can gradually purify the sinful mind of the conditioned soul and raise him to the stage of knowledge. Mm. That means knowledge of the soul. The purified stage of acquiring knowledge becomes the basis of devotional service to the Lord. Right? So, in other words, that's why we said in the beginning you start with the physical activities. Mm. Because much of the time the subtler hasn't been developed. Right, that. So therefore, then one becomes aware of it by performing devotional service. You gain knowledge. Mm-hmm. Then that becomes the basis to appreciate that I'm actually supposed to be serving the Lord.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So devotional service will do that on its own, while jnana on its own will not do it. Right, fruit of activities, you remain in that state, or you'll gradually, over, you know, thousands of lifetimes, come to the platform of jnana. That will elevate you to the point of liberation, but you'll never actually understand the relation with the Lord.
Yes.
So then, again, it will come back to just the gross. Right. As long as one is engaged in researching the solution of the problems of life, his knowledge is called jnana, or purified knowledge. But on realizing the actual solution of life, one becomes situated in the devotional service of the Lord. Right? So you're engaged in researching the solution, that's called jnana. If you're researching it in connection with Krishna, that's jnana yoga. When you understand I'm servant of Krishna and act on that, that's bhakti.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? So jnana yoga is connected with bhakti, it's in pursuance of, so it's counted within the overall process.
Mm-hmm.
But bhakti means you're working from the realization of understanding I'm not the body, I'm the soul, and the soul's nature is servant of Krishna. I realize that, I act like that.
Yes.
Right? Research means I understand, okay, I'm not the body, I'm the soul, so I should be acting like that. So in this situation, I acted like this, that didn't work because of not seeing a connection. So you're seeing that, you're contemplating. So that's the second stage, right? Manana, where you're contemplating. That will give you understanding. But when you keep practicing that, that will give you realization.
Yes.
So that will bring you to the next stage.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So the devotional process itself still will give you these things, but one has to know how. I mean, in other words, if you know how it works, then it works so much more easily.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you don't, it still will work. And eventually, it'll get to the point where you will understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's just if you're aware, it works quicker.
Yes.
In devotional service, when we study, we don't actually call it jnana. We still call it bhakti.
Yes.
Because it's in pursuance of bhakti?
Yes, it's bhakti.
Yes.
But technically within it, it's jnana yoga. Right? If we're researching, if it's a matter of we're just hearing about Krishna and appreciating about Krishna, then it's just the process of hearing within the nine processes. You understand? So that's the nice thing about devotional service is the natural position of the living entity. So there's nothing, how you say, what's the... There's no imposition. Prabhupada uses that. There's no imposition on the mind. It's just it naturally transforms from one into its natural position. In other words, it's gone from the natural position out into an aberration. So to change the aberration back to the natural, there's no stage in between that's not smooth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all what you call seamless, right? It just works very nicely. So that's the perfect thing about it is the activity that the newest person is doing in devotional service is going to be the same thing that the perfected, advanced personality is going to be doing. The difference will be in the consciousness. That's the only difference. Does that make sense?
Or would you say, whereas if somebody's following the jnana process in this technical stages and you can't really overlap and interact and Bhakti is seamless.
Yeah, bhakti is seamless means jnana won't get there. You know, it has it. In other words, within itself, it'll work nicely, but it can't work with what's before it or after it. It can't function. It can't give you the results of karma, right, or purification, and it can't give you the results of bhakti, you know, or a transcendental realization. Just like karma can give you purification, but won't give you, you know, necessarily an understanding, intellectual understanding. So they each work in their own place, but bhakti. The natural position of the soul is all of that. All it is that he's not acting in bhakti, the overall. He targets a certain place. And then you function within that. You know, it's just like we say, you know, let's say, we'll say the modern society. But the modern society includes the slums at Soweto and, you know, Champs-Élysées. Yeah. You understand? So it's the whole range. Yeah, so what is the Western, you know, which one? You know, there's educated, there's uneducated. There's professionals, there's non-professionals. There's skilled, there's unskilled. Where's the, you know, there's, you know, how you say, homophobic, and, you know, there's people who are, you know, xenophobic, and there's all that, and then there's people who are very broad-minded. There's all these different things. So they can't accommodate outside of their small little group. You know what I'm saying? You go into the, you know, local town kind of like, you know, hangout place. You know, it's got the bar and the pool table and you can get something to eat and all that. And everybody will be sitting in their little groups. You know, and there's a few of them. And there's a whole bunch of those little groups. Otherwise, if there weren't those little groups, why do you have a fight? Right? Understand? And one person comes in and another group thinks he's weird. And another group will say, leave him alone. Or he's really weird, and they all say, you know, you know, the whole point is, so the thing is they're just in little groups, and that's just in one little building. Go out on the street, you know, in New York, 20 million people, and you can group them by little groups. And then those little groups will have some common, you can put them in a little bit bigger groups. You know? But you're still going to end up with basically 9 different major, you know, how you say, social demographics within that one city. And each one of them basically has nothing to do with the other. They might have one of them that has one thing in common or that, but they basically have nothing to do with each other. And then within each one of those demographics, you can break it down. And then within that, what you've broken down, then you'll be the few people. And then it comes down to the individual because he's the center of the universe. So it's an illusion that there's this nice, homogenous, everybody working together, the, you know, the rainbow nation, and, you know, the whole thing like that. It doesn't work. They still come into your place with their machine guns and take everything you got, and if you move, they blow your head off. It's that simple. You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is it doesn't exist, but it only exists when you're dealing with Krishna consciousness. That accommodates everything. So therefore, you can see the devotee technically can relate with anybody. Right? So the more advanced, the broader they can relate. Prabhupada could work in any. He was meeting these, you know, ministers of state, and being quite comfortable with them. They're quite comfortable with him. At the same time, he's down there on the Bowery with the Bowery bums, and the Bowery bums are coming in and giving him some toilet paper because they respect him. Right? You know, so it works. That's the point, is that he's able to see all that, because all the elements of karma and jnana, which any materialist will be functioning in, is already part of bhakti. So they can appreciate, right? You know, the neophyte will say, you know, they're just gross enjoyers. No, the devotee, the advanced will see, the reason that they have that enjoying mood is because of the soul. It's the soul that's desiring. Because they want to be happy. But in illusion, they think I'm going to get happy through the particular situation that I'm in. So they see very differently. So the one means they come in very pleasantly and try to point out where it is their attachment and how they can improve themselves. The others, they're just write-offs. And so then when they try to, you know, if they're going to deal anything Krishna consciousness, it's, you know, what we call hardcore. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So that's the point. It's a matter of how much you see. Right? Does that make sense? But that, at least the minimum is it you can see enough that it works for yourself.
Yes.
You know, even if you can't relate to anybody else, but at least you'll get benefit. And if you keep at it with time, you'll get purified so that you can start relating with everybody else.
Yes.
Right? Like that. Okay. Okay. As long as one engages in researching the solution of the problems of life, his knowledge is called jnana, or purified knowledge. But on realizing the actual solution of life, one becomes situated in the devotional service of the Lord. The Bhagavad Gita begins with the problems of life by discriminating the soul from the elements of matter, and proves by all reason and argument that the soul is indestructible in all circumstances, and that the outer covering of matter, the body and the mind, change for another term of material existence, which is full of miseries. The Bhagavad Gita is therefore meant for terminating all types of miseries, and Arjuna took shelter of this great knowledge, which had been imparted to him during the Kurukshetra battle. Right. So now, why the Kurukshetra battle? Why? That means Krishna and Arjuna. He could have talked at any time, right? They're sitting in the palace, you know, lounging on their you know, nice mattress covered with silk covers, and you know, all these different things, and the nice breezes blowing. He could have at that time brought it up. But if he brought it up at that time, then what would we say?
Because the facilities, I'm not in that situation.
Yes, we would say is that, you know, but I'm suffering now. They're having a good time, so naturally they can discuss philosophy. I'm suffering. I can't discuss philosophy. He's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Right? You're not going to get much more difficult than that. Right? And so in that situation, they're talking philosophy. So there's nothing that situation will be in where philosophy can't say, oh, this is no time for philosophy.
Yeah. Pretty tense situation.
Yeah, right. You know, so therefore, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah.
So we can say that difficult moments, we should take shelter of inner knowledge.
Yes. It means the process of devotional service. But the point is why are we having difficulties? Because we're an illusion. Right? In other words, if we're not an illusion, we don't notice it. Right? In other words, we think I'm going to be happy by that. It's just like here, give an example. Let's say you have a higher idea of happiness. Okay? So then the lower aspects that are giving trouble don't bother you at all. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, first of all, getting to the ski lodge. That wasn't easy, right? Then, getting on the ski lift and in those cold breezes going. You're talking about hellish conditions here all around, right? Then you finally get up to wherever it is you want. So then going down that slope, even though it's also freezing, there's trees, there's rocks, you know, all that. You call it happiness, right? You understand? So, in other words, if your goal, and that doesn't work out. Like if you're going down the slope and you actually hit one of those trees, now you have a problem. But that you know you can't feel your fingers or feel your nose or you know anything else like that. You know that you're not worried about. You understand? So if you're suffering, that means the goal that you wanted is not working. So that's coming from illusion. Therefore, the knowledge will help. Like that, but. That knowledge gained in association. Now that's what you're looking for. But the point is whether in association or not, you gained it in association, so you can always remember back and take advantage of that. Does that make sense? Like Arjuna, we see here, how this is coming up. He's remembering these things. He's remembering how Krishna, so he's troubled now, so he's remembering Krishna. Yes.
Arjuna couldn't see the goal, that's why he was reluctant to act, actually.
Yes, because his goal was, we will enjoy, and we'll enjoy with all our relatives and friends. And now all his relatives and friends are on the battlefield. So if you have this war, even if you win, who's left to enjoy it? Therefore, now it's a problem.
Mm. Right.
But before it was just an individual battle, defeat Duryodhana here, or protect ourselves, so then it's not a problem. But when he saw the reality of, okay, they wanted to defeat Duryodhana and all of his supporters, but then when they realized who all his supporters are, then you ended up with, oh,
oh yeah.
I was working, it's the same guy. So I met him yesterday, yeah. I put him out in the garden up there. He was inside. Yeah.
What is it?
He likes
it's a June bug, but it's January, so the only thing I can figure is that the J is common. So, he's a June bug. They don't bite or anything. They make funny sounds if you grab them. They don't really. They move real slow. They fly, but they're a little tamasic. So if you throw them up in the air, many times they don't figure out they're in the air.
So. You've tried.
Yeah, so don't throw a June bug up in the air.
So Maharaj, can we say it's all about Prayojana always?
Basically, you can say it's always about Prayojana, but Prayojana, whatever you gain, goes back to Jumna. It goes back to Sambandha, relationship. So you have a goal, but when you get the goal, it moves back to the situation. So saying the goal is there, you want the goal, but at the same time you want to keep the goal. But having the goal then becomes part of your security.
And then we move forward.
Then from that greater security, then we have a bigger goal. You know, it's just like you have, you know, 10 rupees, then you want 100. Then when you get the 100, you want 1,000. It keeps going, right?
This is okay?
Can I?
That's how far you want to take it. Well, nowadays you can only get up into the billions. You know?
Okay.
Dad, you might raise eyebrows if you get into the trillions. So, you know, stick to the billions. Right. No, the process is fine as long as it's connected to Krishna. That the money itself will give me happiness won't. The doing, the involved with economics to please Krishna, that can give you happiness. But economics itself can never give happiness. Nothing in the world can give happiness. It's connection with the Lord. That's where we started out with. When we see it separate, it won't give us happiness. We see it connection to Krishna, then we can get happiness. That's why then the person who's dealing with money doesn't have to stop dealing with money. Right? So if they're making money, they keep making money. But it's connected with Krishna. Is that right? The rest of chapter 15 is a commentary by Sutta Goswami on Arjuna's reply to Maharaj Yudhishthira and the effect that reply had upon the Pandavas. First, Sutta tells the sages that Arjuna, deeply absorbed in thinking of the instructions of the Lord imparted at Kurukshetra, became pacified at heart as all material contamination vanished from his consciousness. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Arjuna remembered such verses from the Gita as, "I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my eternal creative potency, Yoga Maya. So the deluded world knows me not, who am unborn and infallible." Bhagavad Gita 7:25. Similarly, Srila Jiva Goswami has mentioned the Gita verse Mam evaishyasi satyam te patijane priyosi me. Bhagavad Gita 18:65. "You will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend." Footnote 6. Srila Jiva Goswami has also quoted from the Svarga Parva of the Mahabharata as proof that Arjuna indeed attained Krishna. There, Yudhishthira saw Lord Govinda as the absolute truth in his original personal form. He appeared just as Yudhishthira had seen him before, with all the same characteristics. Right? Because why characteristics? As we were discussing before, Rupa Goswami is making this point of the aspects of vilas. Is that you have all these different expansions of the Lord. Mm. And the difference is the characteristics. Mm. Because it's the same person, but it's what characteristics Krishna is manifesting. Mm. Right? So therefore, because of the particular mood, then there's particular physical, particular forms, there's particular elements of the Dham, associates. So to say that it's the same as before means he didn't like come to him now as Paramatma or any other form. He came to him exactly as he was, as Krishna in Dwarka. Right. Yes.
We heard the statement yesterday that devotion attracts mercy of Krishna, and to attract Krishna as the person, you have to deal on the level of pure devotion. then it's even more personal in which form. Is that correct?
Yes, but what's in pursuance of pure devotion. In other words, pure devotion what attracts the Lord. But if your goal is pure devotion, even what you perform is not pure devotion, still it has that, it gets the Lord's attention.
As a person.
Yes, as a person. So that's the whole point. But our problems come is because of our connection with the material world. We think we're controllers and enjoyers of it. So we think we're creating, we're making things happen. That's Brahman. We think we're in control, we set the standards, that's Paramatma. Therefore, those aspects of knowledge come out so that we know we're not the controller. Right? So that's why those aspects of knowledge are important. But otherwise, the aspects just about Krishna and his personal feature and the attractiveness, that's actually the most important, because that's where the relationship will naturally develop and lie. But because we have a relationship with other now, you know, with the material energy, therefore then these technical points, like of the Gita, are there so that we understand that we're not from that position. And so we'll turn our attention to the personal, you know, of the Lord. Otherwise then, the general tendencies within the material world, most only go as far as Brahman, and some aspects of Paramatma. Okay, he's the controller, he's all-pervading, he's all-knowing, all-seeing. You know, he's at that. He's the lawmaker, like that. But that's and it's not that you want to know him. It's just that he's in charge. Don't do what he doesn't like. That's all. And then your life will be happy, right? But it's about being happy in the material world. So just follow God's laws in that. And then if I do good here, then I'll be given a place within the material world where I can eternally be happy. Right, it's not about going to the spiritual world involved in interaction with the Lord and anything like that. You know, that point of Adam and Eve are walking with the Lord is mentioned in the first chapter, and that's it. It's never mentioned again. No one ever talks about it again. It's not a goal to go back and walk with the Lord again. It's never a goal. It's just a matter of be good here, we'll go to heaven, and we'll enjoy, you know, the material facilities. Eternally instead of temporarily. You know, so therefore, to break that kind of concept, then those elements are there to break it down that there isn't anything here. And the other is then to make the Lord attractive by his personal feature. Does that make sense? So Yudhishthira doesn't have that difficulty being a pure devotee. Right? And ourselves not being pure devotees, but if we're following the pure devotees and trying to apply their instructions, then it's a pursuance in their pure devotion. Yes. So then it's still attractive, because it's not that it's necessarily directly attractive, but it's attractive is that we're assistants of that person. Yes. Right? So Prabhupada's dear to the Lord. So we're trying to do things in connection with Prabhupada. Therefore, in that way, we become dear to the Lord.
Okay.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? That's the importance of, you know, generally it just means the spiritual master, but here for Kali Yuga you have founder acharyas.
Yes.
Because the founder acharya will give the perfect situation no matter where it is, you know, whatever, where it is or what time it is in Kali Yuga. This idea that, you know, Prabhupada stuff, okay, that's great for the 60s or 70s. No, the founder works over, they have the length of their mission. Like Ramanuja's stuff still works today. People follow it today and get results. He has the length of his mission. And Prabhupada mentioned his is for 10,000 years. For 10,000 years, it will be relevant. Right? Because the thing that won't be relevant is the modern. What's relevant today in the modern, after 6 months, isn't really relevant. You know, that's why I stopped at the, whether I should use the word seamless or not, because that's so 1990-ish, you know, like that. So, you know, so they're being very careful there. You know, so the thing is, this always goes out, but these things remain. So we're connecting us through our spiritual, in other words, our spiritual master is connecting us to Prabhupada. It's not that now there's disciples of Prabhupada, then the next ones will be connecting it back to them, becking it back, and then hundreds from now come back, and then finally it's that it is, but it's the clear via media. So it's always your spiritual master, Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada in the previous acharyas headed by Rupa Goswami. Right? So in other words, Rupa Goswami's dear, Prabhupada's dear to Rupa Goswami, so Prabhupada's dear to Krishna. We're trying to assist our spiritual master in serving Prabhupada, so then that connects us, and then we become dear. But if the mentality is something different, then Krishna has no interest. Means he will take care and maintain, because Stanu, it is his creation, he will maintain it. But to have that specific interest in interaction, a poshanam, that has to be that we're interested in him. We're interested in him. He can reciprocate and be interested in us. He's always interested in us. It's just you can only interact if someone's, you know, it's just like if you're sitting next to somebody in bed at the hospital who's unconscious, you want to interact, but they're not exactly reciprocating. So there's not a lot you can do. So if we're totally unconscious of God's existence, how does God interact with that? You know what I'm saying? So that's what's going on. So those, and the reason we're unconscious, because we're so conscious of the material world and what we'll get from it. So when we start to understand that you're not going to get a lot from a mirage, you know, from an illusion, then you start, okay, well, where's the reality? Reality is the creation connects with the Lord. It's his creation. You know, it's just like, let's say the father, he has a nice car, okay? And he has two teenage sons, okay? One is responsible, one's not. Now, if they take, you know, dad's car out for a spin, what's going to be the difference in how they use the car? Yeah, because the one who's responsible, he thinks it's my father's car, and so he'll use it appropriately. And it's not that he doesn't get everything done he wants to get done. In fact, there's a better chance he gets more done. While the other son, he doesn't really think of it as the father's car. He only thinks of it if he gets a ding in the fender, then it's the father's car. Oh, man, I'm going to get in trouble. But other than that, he just takes it out for a joyride and basically doesn't accomplish anything. Right? So that's the difference. So how can the father can respond with that other son? You know, even the point of, okay, here, this car is for you to use. But he can't do that with the other son. It's a waste. Why would a responsible man give a car to a kid who's not responsible? So in the same way, as you're responsible, then Krishna gives you things in this world. Right? And then if you're responsible and aware of him, that's even better. So if the son is responsible because he's just a good driver, then it's still okay. He didn't do anything wrong. That's better. He's better of the two sons. But it still doesn't give rise for interaction. But he's responsible and conscious. That's the best. So that's what's being mentioned, is piety is only valuable its connection to the Lord. Because otherwise piety is good because you recognize God's laws. But if you don't recognize God, then where's the rasa? Where's the relationship? Right? So then it's still materialistic, but it's a better materialistic. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, like the son would consider the responsible son, you know, a better son, but it's not really, you don't have any relationship. He still is on his own, does his own thing. But you know if he asks for the car, he won't bother the car. But it's not like you can't express affection in letting him use the car. You know, so that's the thing with the devotees, the Lord can express that affection in giving them things. But otherwise, if not, just they get things according to their responsibility, but it's through the material energy. And so then that's sthana. That's just maintenance. Well, if it's in relation to him, then that's poshana, that's nourishment. So that's the difference. So poshana is only with devotees. Right? Right, so technically you could say that because God sees all living entities as part and parcel, the sthana is nourishment, you know, from God's side. But technically, because there's no relationship, it's only maintenance. So God intends it that way, but it doesn't come out that way because there's no reciprocation. But when it's reciprocated, then it takes its natural form, a potion.
So in this case, sthana that remains on the level of Paramatma.
Yes. Yeah. Because he's controlling it. And what you're interacting with is Brahman. Yeah. Is that. Okay. He appeared just as Yudhishthira had seen him before, with all the same characteristics. He was glowing brilliantly with the effulgence coming from his own body. And he was surrounded by his transcendental weapons, the disc and so on, which appeared in their fearsome personified forms. O descendant of Kunti, so this is even more, not just the Shankarchakra God and Padma that he has, but the personified forms in there. You know, so that's even more. O descendant of Kunti, Lord Madhusudana, who was being worshipped by the effulgent hero Arjuna, who also appeared in his original form. Then these two lions among men, who are worshipable by the demigods, noticed the presence of Yudhishthira. They approached him with proper respect and offered him worship. Right. So here's the supreme lord and are his part and parcel Arjuna and their relationship going on. Then they notice Yudhishthira, so here's the supreme lord, but then they take the subservient position because Yudhishthira is the older cousin. Like that. So here is Jiva Goswami is giving that as proof of that Arjuna attained Krishna.
Yes.
Rather than they just went to the heavenly planets. Because yes. Right? That's given for those who are, in other words, those who are interested in material facilities, then that much is revealed, so then they see that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, people will take according to what is interesting to them.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Let's say we take a, you know, Chanel gold and, you know, how you say, what's that stuff? Ceramic watch and stick it with diamonds and stick it there. We take a, you know, how you say, one of those, you know, high-end video box kind of gaming things, console, and put it there. And we put, let's say, you know, a Barbie doll there. And that depending upon who we bring and put in front of that, you bring a little girl, she'll take the Barbie doll. You bring a big girl, she'll take the watch. You bring a punk kid, he'll take the, you know, the video game. Right? So you're going to see what you want. All of it's there. You know, so the same way as everything's there. But then people just take what they want. So Mahabharata is written specifically for general mass. But it also has the other aspects. But because of the emphasis on the other thing, then people take that. They don't notice.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, yes.
So now the main thing is to know what we want.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, that's the whole point. And through knowledge, then we know that we think we want something here, but then we find out that what's here doesn't actually get us what we want. So what we want is actually there. It's in the spiritual world. Then we give up that endeavor here. Right? In other words, you have to maintain yourself, so you just function what's here. So whatever you're doing, you continue doing that. But now you change the consciousness, now you're doing a connection with the Lord.
Mm-hmm. And can we say that by practicing devotional service, it's very important to want to become a pure devotee of Krishna?
Yes. Because if you want, means in other words, if you know what your goal is, you'll get it quicker. If you don't know what your goal is, you don't really get anything.
Yes.
You know, it's just like the kid knows what they want to do, then they start playing that game. They don't know what they do. They sit around doing all kinds of stupid stuff for a long time because they don't know what they want to do. Or an adult, when they don't know what they want to do, then it goes all over the place. They have no direction.
Yeah.
Right, but as soon as they know what they want to do, then there's action. Because what happens is, if you don't know what you don't want to do, there being no goal, there's no action.
Yes.
Right. So the whole point is, action comes from goal. Goal comes from desire.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we start from that as we hear the philosophy. From that, we get the understanding of what's real. So we get the desire for pure devotional service.
Yes.
Then, with practice, it becomes our goal. Right, so then we are acting within the pursuance of pure devotional service till by that practice we get to pure devotional service.
Yes.
So if it's known, but the point is, devotional service is so perfect, even if we don't understand it as the goal, we'll still get benefit.
Yes.
We'll still progress. But if we understand it, we'll progress quicker. You know, that's what Krishna says. Is he's talking to Nanda Baba. When he asks Nanda Baba, well, why are you doing this Indra-yagya? And he says, well, we don't know. We've always just done it. He says, it means the results you get from knowing what you want are greater than if you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They just know they do this, it's good, it's auspicious. So they want auspiciousness, so they're doing it. So they know that much of their goal, but they don't know the mechanics of what they're doing, what it's doing. But when you actually understand your goal and how the mechanics get you that, then it works quicker. Is that what I'm saying? You know. Therefore, the study of Shastra, so that we understand what we're doing. Right? No, that's the point. That's why it's, Prabhupada said, if it's philosophy without the culture, then it'll be mental speculation. And the culture without the philosophy, it'll be sentiment. Right? So that's why that must be the study and the practice. Then you get both. It's complete then. So,
yes, no, it's
okay. In his Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada also explains the importance and potency of remembering Krishna in separation. To acquire the strong feeling of separation is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya and his direct disciples, the six Goswamis. When we are not in physical contact with Krishna, we can associate with him like the gopis, through feelings of separation. Krishna's transcendental form, qualities, pastimes, and entourage are all identical with him. There are 9 different kinds of devotional service. Devotional service to Krishna and feelings of separation elevates the devotee to the highest perfectional level, to the level of the gopis. Those who are in the disciplic succession of the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya should always feel separation from Krishna. Worship his transcendental form and discuss his transcendental teachings, his pastimes, his qualities, his entourage, and his association. That will enrich the devotees to the highest devotional perfection. Feeling constant separation while engaged in the service of the Lord is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. Right, so that's the point where we're trying to get to. Now, just discussing that all the time is not going to be the point. You know what I'm saying? Those who are not so mature in the process may do that. Mm-hmm. But the actual point is discussing how to get to that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So now here it is that he says we should all feel separation. Worship is transcendental form. Okay, so that means you're worshiping the deity, or you're worshiping his name, like this. But you're going to be discussing teachings, pastimes, qualities, entourage, and this association. And it's also interesting to note it always goes in this order. Right? You see even on the previous page. Then it said, Krishna's transcendental form, qualities, pastimes, and entourage.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because then what you're doing is, and then in here is that form, between the form is we had the teachings, right? So the teachings are that knowledge. So we understand the actual knowledge of what is the position of the Lord, right? So the knowledge of the Lord, the living entity, the spiritual world, the material world, like this, right? Mm-hmm. Then we have his pastimes. So we hear about that. So the pastimes themselves are attractive, but we don't necessarily see him as a person as such. He's, of course, he's a person, but it's not the concentration on him as a person. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore, then the qualities come out. Or we can say when we appreciate his qualities, then we'll actually appreciate the pastimes, like that here is mentioned here, qualities, then pastimes. But then afterwards, after pastimes, then it will mention his entourage.
Yes.
Because then it's the Lord is there. Yes, we can relate to the Lord as a person, but do we relate to the devotees as people? Because
yes.
It's always God and me.
Yes.
Right? So that's what it says. That Mirabai, that was a lower level of understanding because she's talking about God and myself.
Yes.
She's not talking about broader than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then then it says in this one, and his association. Then what is the association between him and his associates?
Yes.
You know, what's that rasa that they're tasting? Mm-hmm. So here he's giving a very...
Yes.
Right? So now all that's being done, of course, in as he's mentioned here, in that sense of separation, because then you feel that that's where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, you know, so then that's, you know, when you get that, then you know you're doing okay. Right? But as you mentioned here, it comes from the direct disciples, the six Goswamis. So what Prabhupada is giving us is that knowledge and the teachings of those six Goswamis. So there's never a contradiction between Prabhupada's teachings and the Goswamis. Right? It's just a matter of sometimes because we get stuck on words, we may think it is, but that will never be. It can't be. Okay. Śrīla Goswāmī continued, Arjuna's spiritual assets as an associate of the Lord, which had apparently been covered by his doubts and lamentation, were fully restored. As his eternal identity asserted him itself, Arjuna was released from the fetters of the modes of material nature. Right, so it's just in that separation, then it apparently became covered. Mm-hmm. Right? And so these pastimes come up. Right? So that's a point. It's if we feel that things aren't going right, it's simply by remembering the Lord. You can say, I'm doing everything for the Lord. I'm doing why it's not working out for me. Mm-hmm. No, you remember the Lord. You remember who you are in relation to the Lord. Then it'll start to work.
Yes.
Right? It worked for Arjuna. You know, and he's got a really bad situation. Yes.
Can we say that in this particular situation, Arjuna lamented, then he remembered all the pastimes of the Lord?
Yes.
Very intimate, very nice.
Yes.
And then after that, he came to the basic knowledge of, you know, you know this body, and wasn't it like going this way?
No, but by remembering the Lord, then because what is the lamentation? Oh, you know, I'm the same Arjuna, the same chariot, the same Gandiva bow, and I couldn't even defend, fight off a bunch of cowherd men with sticks.
He wasn't lamenting that.
It was
he
one of the points.
That.
No, but that's part of the thing is, yes, but there's a separation. But the point is dealing with that aspect, then is then that knowledge and that remembrance of Krishna and the teachings come back, and that elevates him back to his natural position. You know what I'm saying? Because in other words, we have a relationship with the Lord. We just have to reawaken that.
Yes.
So technically, we're in the same position as Arjuna. Right? He's dynamic. He's actually on the platform of prema, but they act as if they're not. You know what I'm saying? That's Rupa Goswami's principle, is that these advanced devotees, they act as if they're neophytes.
Yes.
It means they're not, but they act as if they are. You know what I'm saying? So then we can relate and we can then establish. But the point is why are these being done? Why Yoga Maya would cover these devotees? For us, right? So then it's a matter of whatever situation we're in, and we're thinking that my prowess is not working, what's going on? You know, I'm a devotee, why isn't Krishna taking care? Like that. Then it's just a matter of remembering Krishna. And then the actual teachings, you know, that, you know, we're not the body, we're not these things, so I'm not the conditioning, so it's not about how well the conditioning going, that is the symptom of Krishna's affection for me. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's what we were discussing yesterday. That's the part we don't really want to hear. We want to hear is that if Krishna loves me, he'll make my material situation fabulous. You know, the point is that's like saying, you know, you're in the hospital bed with all the tubes and all that, but they're all boring and the same, just clear color. Can't there be, you know, a different colors? You know, the air hose is one color and the water one is a different one, and you know, like that. And you know, can't we brighten up the room a bit? You know, change the sheets. Come on, let's do something here. Paint the walls. But Krishna's point is, you don't belong in the hospital. But we're saying, it's a nice hospital, hey. It's a private room. That's the point. So that's why then the philosophy, if it's there. So if it needs to remind us that we're supposed to get out of the hospital, then it's good. And if not, it'll go directly. You know, so it's, in other words, it's whatever's necessary, then that will be how it will flow. Right? Bhakti has its own natural course. You know, so for us, if it worked like this, that would be a good day. Okay. Right? And we're not talking about biscuits here. Right? In his commentary to verse 29, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains why Arjuna was always free of material contamination. But the word mala means things, contaminations, like lust. That is true. But because Arjuna is not just an associate of the Lord, but the avatar Nara, it is impossible for him to have such contamination. So it's not that he's just a devotee, he's actually the avatar. Because Nara Narayan. So he can't actually manifest, because they're considered one avatar, so he can't be manifesting qualities which an avatar can't have. Right? Like that. So that's his point. But perhaps we can say that his being an Amsa of Indra can have contamination. That also cannot be true, because that may be the, you know, okay. Okay, so the Nara part doesn't, but what about the Amsa of Indra? Because Draupadi being Indra's wife then is marrying the Pandavas, who are each Indra's, so therefore it's not a problem that she, as Indrani, marries Indra, right? Even though there may be five of them, That can also not be, that also cannot be, this verse explains. Arjuna had intelligence completely free from all contaminations, such as lust from the very beginning by bhakti, which appeared from his birth. Right? So in other words, we can understand it's just yoga maya. It's not mahamaya. It's just for the pastime that this happens, so that we can gain from thee. Because otherwise, if it didn't look like what we do, we wouldn't take it as an example. I mean, so I'm not sure if you've had the experience, but let's say someone is very disturbed, something's really gone wrong, and you try to explain something of the philosophy. Many times the first thing it is, well, that doesn't apply. Oh, that's okay, that's Arjuna, but I'm not Arjuna. So then, you know, that's the first thing. You throw that out because, you know, I can wallow in my ignorance. So you understand? So but the point is it's presented so it looks exactly the same. Then we can say, he had a situation like I did. He did this, he got this result. I do that, I'll get the same result. That's the point. Right? Because we see even the demons, then Hiranyakashipu, he used Vedanta philosophy when his family members were lamenting the loss of a family member. And they're straight up front demons. It doesn't mention that his wives were devotees, and the ladies of the house were devotees. No, only Prahlad was. They were all, you know, hardcore, card-carrying, flag-waving demons, right? You know? And so, pure, unalloyed demons. Right? But still, Vedanta is the thing, if you want to discuss about you know, death in the family. It means they're not the bodies, they're the souls. There's nothing to lament. So it always works, you know. And then by here, then it should. Then the other point is because Arjuna did that, it worked for him, and it brought him back to his natural relationship. Does that make sense? So it'll work for us. Yes. We'll be brought back to our natural position and relationship with Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we remember, right? So, right? So one could, at this point, a doubt could come up. That brings us back to, but since we were on the platform of prema, you know, then we've got back to our position wherever it is, in, let's say in Braj, and we have that spirit, our sarup. Okay? But we still don't have love for Krishna. But the point is he's remembering the Lord. So if we keep remembering the Lord, then it will move to that, you know, smarta dasa will attain, samadhi will develop that purva rag. Right, the complete attachment. Then we'll have that direct association with Krishna, and then we'll naturally, by continuing that remembrance, develop prema. So it's still the same process. So just as it's working now at what stages we're at, it'll work there. So it works no matter if you're in the neophyte, madhyam, or uttam platform. Does that make sense? So you don't have to worry. It will work. Srila Prabhupada elaborates on the same topic. Material desires in the mind are the trash of material contamination. Okay. Didn't even say garbage, trash. Okay. By such contamination, the living being is faced with so many compatible and incompatible things that discourage the very existence of spiritual identity. By assimilating the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, one is sure to be released from such bewilderment because real knowledge is knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, is everything, including oneself. Everything is a manifestation of his potency as part and parcel. The potency and the potent are non-different. So the conception of duality is at once mitigated by attainment of perfect knowledge. You can see as this point means, I'm not sure if this point would be, you'd find relevant, but this point of this non-dual element, we see that Prabhupada discusses it constantly. You know, we know it's there, but we see as any problem comes back to this. Is we think we're separate from the Lord. But at the same time, is then the option of merging in the Lord, that's also not a point, because then there's no difference, there's no specialness. Because you can only have a relationship if there's something special. Right? Does that make sense? It means Balaram and Krishna are non-different. They're exactly the same person, but because of Visesha, or specialness, there's that uniqueness that therefore they can interact. Right? So the same way as the jiva is non-different from the Lord as his energy, but there's Visesha, so therefore you can act.
Yes.
Yes.
You say Visesha is one of the potencies of yoga mind?
Visesha means specialness. So that's the whole point, is everything is one, but everything has a uniqueness. You know, it's just like the one body, but you know, your hand is different from your arm. You know, and in the hand the fingers are different, and each finger is different, and on the finger then the joints are different, then the nail, you know, it's like, so everything has a specialness. But it's one body. But because of specialness, you say this is a hand, this is a head, this is a nose, like that. You understand? But it's still one thing. So the same thing, we're still part and parcel of Krishna. We're the same with Krishna. But by Visesha, uniqueness, we're different. We're jivas. You know, we're the jiva aspect of God. You know, saying? Jivas are God, but we're the jiva aspect of God. God is the complete. And we're part of that complete. So when we act within that completeness, in our unique position, right? Then it works, because if we just are part of the whole, or we're unique, then it's a problem. So merging into the Lord doesn't get us anything, and acting in material consciousness doesn't. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that's what you can get. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Karma comes from, I'm different. Right? Jnana comes from, I'm the same. Yes. And neither of those will get you into the spiritual world. What will get you into the spiritual world is I'm non-different and the same. Then that's bhakti. That can get you into the spiritual world. You understand? So that's why it always comes back to karma and jnana and bhakti. Because these are the three ways you can look at it. Right? Because this is the essential thing. From this, everything's expanding. Right? So therefore, that samanda jnana means chit achit ishwara, means the Lord, the living entity in the material world. Then you're understanding what is the uniqueness. Right? You know, what is that? That's your samanda jnana. What's the relationship within that? You know, we're one, but we're different. So what's the relationship? So that explains it. Right? Because that's where you can start to interact. The potency and the potent are not different. So the conception of duality is at once mitigated by attainment of perfect knowledge. It so appeared that Arjuna and the Lord were engaged in the battle of Kurukshetra, as the other party was also engaged. But factually, the Lord was executing his mission of incarnation and association with his eternal friend Arjuna. Therefore, such apparently material activities of Arjuna did not drive him away from his transcendental position, but on the contrary, revived his consciousness of the songs of the Lord as he sang them personally. By the grace of the Lord, a pure devotee is at once raised to the place of the Absolute, and there's no chance of the devotees becoming materially entangled again in conditioned life. One is not able to feel the presence of the Lord in all circumstances until one is endowed with the required transcendental vision made possible by devotional service prescribed in the revealed scriptures. So that's why it has to go back to scripture. Because it means devotional service as revealed in the scriptures. Because if you make it up, it won't actually function. Arjuna had attained this stage long before on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And when he apparently felt the absence of the Lord, he at once took shelter of the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. And thus, again, he was placed in his original position. This is the position of Vishoka, or the stage of being free from all grief and anxiety. Footnote 7. According to Bhagavatam 5.4.5 purport, the Vishoka stage is one of the eight symptoms of a liberated soul. Quote, Srila Vairagacharya states that in the Chandogya Upanishad, there are eight symptoms of a Jivan Mukta, a person who is already liberated even when living in this body. The first symptom of one so liberated is that he is freed from all sinful activity. Apahata, papa. As long as one is under the clutches of Maya in the material energy, one has to engage in sinful activity. Because sinful means it's not connected with the Lord.
Yes.
Right? Pious means it's connected with the Lord's laws, but not the Lord himself. When it's connected with the Lord's laws and the Lord, it's called devotion. Does that make sense? But the point is, it's because the purpose of being in the material world is to enjoy separately from the Lord. Even if you follow the rules, you only follow them as long as you see you're getting the benefit. But if you ever think that I can get this without, you'll perform sin. It's just going to happen. Yes?
But if you're performing mixed devotional service, then that's like, are you performing half sin, half...
Means the point mixed. The ideal is what's mixed is pious. It's not ideal to mix impious with Krishna.
It's impossible to.
It's very, very difficult. In other words, the intelligence it would take to apply sinful activities in the Lord's service. Then, if you have that kind of intelligence, why would you do that? You would use pious. You understand? You know, but you do have examples like that one acharya. He wanted to build that wall around Sri Rangam to protect it, so he had three disciples, one that could walk on water, one that could open any lock, and one that could hide in his own shadow. So between the three of them, then at night they go out and steal from all the, you know, they wouldn't steal from pious people, they'd steal from very wealthy materialistic people, right? Because and the point was, is then that person, because that money was used for Krishna, that person would get the benefit. In other words, they weren't going to engage in devotional service in any case. So this way they went out and engaged them. But by external, you're looking at it that they were engaging sinful activity. But as soon as the acharya was going to leave, his pastimes were finished, he sent those other three devotees before him. Because otherwise, if they stayed back, they might make trouble.
Yeah.
Right? So only as long as he was there, then they performed these pastimes.
So it's not what's not engaged, it's not what's not able to be engaged.
Yes. Well, no, even it's what's not engaged, in this case, what you're saying, then that will be what's neutral or pious. What can't be engaged, that's impious.
And so what's the difference?
You know what I'm saying? That's the general. But the point is if you have an understanding, then the Lord's energy is non-different. So anything can be used in any way. Okay. But the point is it's not a good example. So in other words, in that whole Ramanuja line, you only have one example of this. Only one. You know? And I'm not sure if it wasn't the same... Yeah, the same one. Yeah, the same people. They went and they covered the dome of the temple in gold. That was a famous Buddha deity that was solid gold. I'm not sure that the gold wasn't stolen from a temple before and then made into the Buddha deity. I don't know the whole history. But he came and they stole the deity. And then the Buddhists came and said, we want our deity back. And he says, you'll not get less than the tip of the little finger. But you know, direct meaning, it means you'll only get the tip of a finger. But in usage, in Tamil, that means even the tip of the finger won't be missing. You'll get the whole thing. It's a way of usage. You understand? Because sometimes usage is the opposite of the meaning. So. But what he meant was, you'll only get the tip of the finger back. So after they put it all in the temple, he gave back the tip of the finger to the Buddhists. And they didn't appreciate it. I think it started a war, but whatever. So he would do things, but he was the only one of all their acharyas who would do stuff like this. Like that. You know, so in other words, it points out that it's not just that I'm pious, that's why, because you always have to have one example of this. Even in our lives, there'll be examples, you know, the example of the butcher, you know, and the shaligram. He used to have the shaligram, he put it on the weight, you know, you have the weight things, you know, and it swings.
Yes.
So he was a butcher, so he put meat on one side and he put the shaligram on the other side as the weight. And then some Brahmin saw this and then, you know, made a whole scene and all that, took the Shaligram. And the Shaligram came in a dream and says, I was having fun. I got to swing every day. Like that, you know. I'm at your house, where's the swing? You know, it's like, you know, so the Brahmin had to get him a swing. But the point was, is these are always brought out because there's the element that we'll think it's because I'm pious, that's why the Lord likes me. No, it's because you're devotional, that's why he likes you. You're good because you're devotional, not because you're pious. Because there's always the example of the very arrogant, pious person and the very nice, not pious person. Right? Because that's why you get the example, you know, I say God forbid, but the good Samaritan, right?
Yes.
What does it mean, Samaritan? It means he was not Jewish. Right? So in other words, you're giving the example of a good non-Jew. Like, how can that happen, right? You understand? So it's being brought out that it's not just because you're following the rules that that's why God's pleased. It's that you have the right attitude also. You understand? So all scriptures will bring out this. It means what you want to do, that will be the prominence. But they have to give this contrary one, otherwise we'll make the mistake. I'm doing so good, I'm a senior devotee, I'm managing, I have a big position, I'm doing everything right, therefore I'm the most advanced devotee. No, advanced means according to your attitude. Because the point is why is that devotee doing that? He's the big manager, because if he wasn't a devotee, he'd still be a big manager. You know? It's not that because I became a devotee, now I became a big manager. That's their nature. They're always going to do that. You understand? So now they're engaged in Krishna service. That's why it's perfect. Not that I'm doing bigger service than you. That's why I'm better. That's neophyte. So that's why these stories are there to counteract that. Does that make sense? So other than those, then the recommendation is you engage pious activities in the Lord's service. That's why a pious lifestyle and everything is given. You know, getting up early, bathing, being clean, being, you know, dealing nicely, all these different things are there. Does that make sense? Yeah, because that's what works. Is that okay? As long as one is under the... Okay. Bhagavad Gita describes such people as duskritina, which indicates that they're always engaged in sinful activity. Right? So as long as one is under the clutches of maya, then one will be a duskritina. Right? One who is liberated in this life does not commit any sinful activities. Sinful activities involves illicit sex, meat-eating, intoxication, and gambling. Another symptom of a liberated person is vijara, which indicates that he is not subject to the miseries of old age. Right? In other words, Prabhupada, he'd just go on as natural. Even though the body's getting older, he's just going. He's not affected by it. Mm-hmm. Like
all
that.
Right.
Yes.
With the four regular principles, I've heard so many times that kshatriyas can break, they can do gambling and hunting and all this thing, and they're still devotees. Like, how does that work?
Because it means you're talking about here is that, so what does that mean, hunting? You know what I'm saying? This will bring it out. What do you mean, hunting? So what's the problem?
Well, you're killing an animal when it's not lived its karma in that body.
And then?
And then it has to take that body again.
But is that what the kshatriya is doing? See, this is the problem. Yes. Is the kshatriya now that animal killed? Because you can only kill certain animals. Yes. And those animals that are killed are only ones that can be used in sacrifice. And then engaging that animal in sacrifice, that animal is relieved from all the karma that is the distance between their animal life and human life.
Okay.
You understand? Let's say they're supposed to take birth data, 10 lifetimes as a wild boar. They've killed them. Now, if it was a regular hunter, you get the karma because of that, because now they have to take birth again because that one wasn't finished. But they're going to engage them in sacrifice. So that means that life and the other 9 lifetimes of a boar have been, that jiva in that body of the boar is relieved from that, so their next life is immediately human. Of course, what's not talked about is that karma goes to the kshatriya. right? You know, understand? So in other words, they're not sinful activities. But only Kshatriyas do that. But why would a Vaishya need to do that, or a Brahmin? It's only because, one, is that they need to keep up on their on their fighting skills. So if there's no war, they need to be able to practice their archery. The second thing is that the animals that they generally go after are the ones that are dangerous. So tigers, boars, things like this, that is going to bother the saintly people who live in the forest. If there's some of them, it's okay, right? If there's more other animals and less dangerous animals, the dangerous animals will bother the less dangerous animals. But if there's more of them, then they'll bother the sages, right? So it's not a problem.
But it's not possible to do that today because, the sacrifice is not...
No, so it's not recommended in Kali Yuga, but the point is that, so we have to understand that. It's just like, I think in Trivandrum, I don't know if it's still there, but it was there up to the 80s, that every year on a particular day, there was some festival with the deities, because there's some connection between the deity in Trivandrum and the king. Like that, why the deity came or something. And so then every year at this time they set up a demon or something, and they have with a big pumpkin head. So this idea of pumpkins and demons, they go back a long way, right? And then the king rides by on the horse, and from the horse he shoots the pumpkin. So then the citizens know our king, is still a good shot. so that he can protect us. So it's all. Does that make sense? So the citizens also have to know that the king is able to perform his duties of protection. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you have so many things involved, but it's only Kshatriyas do that.
And the gambling?
Oh, I thought you could go the other way. Okay. Yeah. The gambling is... Most go the other way, right? The gambling is there, it's a challenge. So it's not that they go out, in other words, you're not going to find them in Reno or Atlantic City. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's they've been challenged by another Kshatriya.
Okay.
Right? It means at a roulette table, who's challenging? What's going on there? It's just you and the board, or you and the, like that. There's a challenge. So then it's between you, so it's a fight.
Okay.
So only under those conditions. But as we see, as Yudhishthira pointed out, then the gambling match with Duryodhana wasn't fair because Duryodhana, challenged him, so Duryodhana should be throwing the dice.
Yes.
But he got a professional gambler to throw the dice. Professional gambler means they sit there for hours, weeks, months, years, taking the dice, holding it in a particular way, throwing it in a particular way, and they see what number is here, what it'll come out there.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So they can get to the point of whatever number is here, they can get what they want there by throwing it more, this or that, or knowing, and the dice is like that. I don't want to freak anyone out. I pick them up as they are, and I look at them in my hand, and I can tell from there whether I'm going to get odd or even, or what number I'm going to get. Then I can throw them and get that. That's a professional gambler, because that's all they do. So that's not allowed. That's cheating.
Yes.
But because Dhritarashtra wasn't complaining, he wasn't saying this is wrong, then Yudhishthir then accepted it. But otherwise, the thing is it has to be two equals that are gambling. So then it's gambling, in other words, they're fighting with dice instead of, with swords. Does that make sense? But if you get too involved in it, it still will distract your mind, just like getting too involved in hunting will distract your mind. Because it's about maintaining your skills and about sacrifice. Right? Does that make sense? So if it goes beyond that, then it's bad for a Kshatriya. If his gambling goes beyond that, then it's bad for him. So it has to be, and at the same time, these always give problems. So therefore, they should only be dealt with, actually they're needed to be dealt with. Because therefore there's examples of Yudhishthira lost everything, Nala lost everything from gambling. Pandu, lost his life due to hunting. So like that. So they're given that otherwise the people just, we can do this.
Yes.
Does that make sense? And the last one is then, as we see, Yudhishthir asked Arjuna, are you feeling bad because of an illicit connection? So it's only if he's approached by a qualified woman that fits within the guidelines that could be matched with him. You understand? But then she becomes the wife. You know, he's not out with someone else's wife. You know, it's just like Ulupi. She approached him. But she's the daughter of a king. And he's the son of a king. So they can be married. Yeah. But it's not that you have the whole arrangement. It's just she approached, so therefore, but they're married. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that relationship remains. So this whole idea that it's illicit, no, it's not. That there's nothing illicit anywhere.
Yeah, I was thinking of that example when being approached, you become approached by that demoness.
Yes, but then they became married. But the point is, you know, they're powerful, they're Rakshasas, they're not from here. So they're in another category. She had just been a forest lady, then it's not a good match. But she's from the, Antariksha, they're in between here and heaven. So they're superhuman. So then, okay, there's a bit of a match. Right?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada, King of Samaveta Bhakti, Vindication, Jainatai Gaura Premanam.